You're listening to episode 145 of Drunk on Comics, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com and Motor City Comic Con.
Kind of like how we've been doing it, if you listen to us.
Yeah. I've listened to a couple episodes in the last few months.
That's nice. That's all right. I mean, it's like we've only helped, you know, bring you to where you're at.
Oh, yeah. It's like how many pages of Silver Flake have you read?
I think I was up to 8 when, at that point. I had to wait for...
I've read 28
a couple
so
pages
far.
In the last few months.
Yeah. Yeah, you have.
You've read how many?
28.
That's crazy. I want to know how you got those extra 4 pages.
Time travel.
Yeah. Well, guys, this is Drunk on Comics. My name's Derek.
My name's Tony.
And we have a blast from the past.
Our therapist.
Yeah, our therapist, Jim.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Yeah, so longtime listeners of the show will know Jim is firmly intern Jim, sidecar Jim, sideshow Jim. Jim, go get me a beer.
Originally it was, I think the first nickname was intern. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, and I believe pretty much all of your responses were, you got it, boss. But, yeah, we'll get things kicked off here, relatively soon. But Jim, you've been out drawing comics and stuff.
A little bit.
Okay. Well, luckily, we'll talk a little bit more about your book here a little bit later, but since it's clearly not the best book this week, we're going to hold off a little bit, get things kicked off here with Off the Shelf. Off the Shelf is brought to you guys by Motor City Comic Con, which is happening this May 15th, 16th, and 17th at the beautiful Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi, Michigan. Make sure you get your tickets. If you guys like the comic books, which obviously you do if you're listening to us, awesome lineup already, and if you like the media guests, holy shit, I don't think you're going to see a lineup like this outside of maybe New York or San Diego.
Yeah, it's pretty outrageous.
Yeah, it's truly outrageous. So,
speaking... Oh, I owe many people money. How many times I knew you were going to say that today?
What, the truly outrageous? Speaking of truly outrageous, I'll get things kicked off here with... Gem and the Holograms, number 1 from IDW, and now I got the subscription variant cover, which was done by Sarah Richard. Beautiful work, and I mean, to me, and I don't know, Jim, you can help me out here a little bit. Is that colored pencil in there too, or is it just colored marker?
It looks like it's probably like mixed media, just. There's a couple things going on here.
Yeah.
There's definitely, it's probably a mix between paint, color pencil, regular pencil.
Maybe some digital?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
It's put together very nicely.
Yeah, gorgeous cover, which one of the things that Jim noticed first when I showed it to him is the fact that the title / logo for Gem and the Holograms is actually a hologram foil print on the cover. But I wanted to talk about this one really briefly because even, you know, as a young boy, I fucking loved the Gem the Holograms cartoon. I don't know why. It just, you know, totally, it had that 80s feel, you know, it's like.
Well, for sure it did because it was a cash cow in for their toys. It was a joint venture between Hasbro and some company and. The makers.
Yeah, was it Hasbro that made the toys, do you know? Okay.
Because there was a huge to-do about it taken away from the Barbie line. I know this stuff because I researched it because I was going to review this book, and then Derek started.
Which cover did you get?
I just got the band cover. Kind of wanted to have all of them there present.
Was it that cover A?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's got the foil, too.
All of them do.
Yeah. Well, and then there were individual covers that had all the different members, like just single on there. I don't know, Jim, if you saw the lineup of the covers in the back.
Oh, wow.
But there's also a thing that I saw, and I think it's in here. Yeah, it is. That if you want... All of the covers.
That made me laugh.
Yeah, it's all the covers, but I don't think the subscription cover was in here. But if you want all of the covers A through E, you can get a box set in there, and it's $24.99 for five covers or for five books with the little slipcase box. And I was like, nah, that's not a bad deal, because I mean, this is a, you know, how much was this? The book was $4, so I mean, you're basically spending an extra $5 or whatever it is for the box.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay. Yeah, that's not terrible, but
so you're looking at spending what was it, $24.99 for Gems box?
Yeah, yeah, that's well, I and Gems box, but I mean also, I mean, you know, you're getting all the girls, you get all their boxes for that price, which I think that's a hell of a deal. Yeah. But yeah, a little credit here first on this one. We've got Kelly Thompson doing the art, Sophie Campbell's doing, or I'm sorry, Kelly Thompson wrote it, Sophie Campbell did the art, and the story is by the two of them together. Colors are by M. Victoria Roboto, and letters by Robbie Robbins. This is just a fun book, and I think one of the reasons why I like it is, all I remember about the cartoon is when they're already in the midst of everything. You know, you've got Jericho, who has her little star earrings,
hologram, yeah.
Hologram earrings that allows her to turn into Gem, and she lives her normal life, but when she becomes Gem, it's like bang pow, you know? And there's the fun of it. This one here is it starts with them right at the very beginning. The other three girls, they're full on, like, you know, ready to become rock stars, and Jerrica is this shy little girl that as soon as somebody else is watching her, she can't fucking sing and she breaks down. It's a fun little story in the fact that you kind of see a little bit more of the, I guess, the timid and scared side of the main character of Jericho, who will become Gem. I'm not going to get too much into it, but she eventually finds Synergy, because I don't want to spoil what goes on in the book. I would like to leave a little bit of mystery for people to read it. I don't want to be a misfit and, you know, and spoil too much. But she finds Synergy in there.
Which is the ultimate audiovisual entertainment synthesizer. And that she repeated that a couple of times. I'm like, wow, okay. Like, Jem's dad created this energy being to be, like, the best pop star ever. Here you go. Here's some earrings that can have her come on out. Like, it. I can understand a secret, like, band double life, like, helping out kids and shit, like, Josie and the Pussycats doing crazy stuff each week in the episodes. That's just a mind-boggling thing. Like, they live in a world where that holographic, like, interface.
See, I think he was trying to create a home theater system, and it just happened. That Synergy happened. Sure. He wanted to go for, like, the coolest thing.
But here's the thing. That was when I was doing some research to my nostalgia. You know, I was trying to see if it held up to what I was thinking Gem was, and watched a couple episodes and rocked out to some of the songs and enjoyed it like I'm sure I did as a kid.
I always loved the montages in that cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like during the songs.
Yeah, actually, like, I got a question. That's one of my favorite parts about the cartoon, is just jumping right into like a music video.
Right.
Do we get that in the comic?
Not yet.
There was a part with a song written. But what I want to say is I didn't remember this, but part of the reason why Jerrica does her dual life and everything is because she's trying to hide this Synergy from the clutches of the world, like, you know, what they could do with holographic imaging and everything, which I didn't remember that part of the show at all. Like, I just remembered them battling the misfits and getting into hijinks, and
yeah,
not that there's a subplot of, like, try to take the hologram thing.
Which okay, now they haven't introduced the male love interest in this, but
what's his name, Rico?
I think so, yeah. But I always found that guy interesting because he's like, no, Jericho, I love you. I totally want to fuck you, Gem.
Yeah. And she was okay with it.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, that's a little awkward. But one of my favorite little Easter eggs in this story, though, was when Synergy was telling them on the jukebox to punch in that code. Tony, did you notice anything about that code?
No.
Okay, so the code is 7963749, which, if you were to punch that in on your phone, the letters correspond to spell Synergy.
Oh.
I was like, I was like, I wonder. And I looked at my phone. I'm like, yep, sure as fuck does. So it was just kind of cool. The artwork by Campbell in this is just really, really fun.
I'm not even going to say art. The colors is what just fucking makes this book. I mean, I'm a guy, so, like, hot pink is not, like, my favoritest of colors, but it fucking rocks on these pages.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, you know, I think probably my favorite character as far as, you know, how it was drawn in here was Kimber, you know, her sister, that, I mean, she's extremely expressive in there, very stylish looking, and one of the things I like, too, is in the last few pages, they actually have kind of the breakdown of each of the characters, their likes, their dislikes, and, you know, shows, you know, who they are, stats, and stuff like that. I like the fact, too, that both Asia and Shana, I don't remember how you said her name, how they're not stereotypical comic book women. They're actually drawn more like real women.
Yeah.
They have curves, you know, they're a little bit normal sized in proportion. I mean, Kimber is definitely, you know, that slim, tall, slender, model-esque look to her. You know, and obviously Jem is as well, but Jerrica is a little bit more of a normal kind of everyday athletic girl too, I think. So
I love that Campbell really like updated the band and
No, never mind. Keep going.
Oh, I just as far as character design goes and stuff, this is really fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
Did you read I know you don't always read the stuff at the back, but did you read the whole holograms thing of them talking about making this?
Yeah.
I thought that's where I've been enjoying more and more writers, artists, whoever you are when you're making books. Fucking put some of your notes in the back. It's interesting to see. And one of the parts that I really like that I already talked about in nostalgia before is that you can't ever live, like they wrote, you can't ever live up to it, let alone outshine something so powerful, personal, something so nostalgic, that to take something like this, they had high hopes for it, but then when even they're thinking, how do I take on this task to reintroduce or redo something, you just kind of got to throw some of that out the window. You got to say, but we need to make it our thing. And I think they totally did with the same point, having what it was that made up the band, and glad the band got back together.
Yeah, I am too. This book, I mean, for first issue, it just is setting up where things are going, but I got a feeling that this is going to be a really awesome story arc, that it's going to be just a fun book all around. So I kind of wanted to bring some attention to that. And quickly, only because it ties in so well with the nostalgia factor, I have to mention Miami Vice Remix. Because I wanted to bring this one up. This is Miami Vice Remix is really the best way, I think, to describe it. Now, this is from Lion Forge. And Joe Casey did the story, art and letters by Jim Mahfood, and colors by Justin Stewart. And this is a very unique look, it's fun for... Did you guys watch Miami Vice when you were kids, or were you too little?
No. We were too little.
Okay. I loved Miami Vice, you know, with Crockett and Tubbs, and it's funny because, like, the first page, and, like, getting into the second page, it's the same shots, almost, as the actual intro to the thing, and then all of a sudden they just come busting through it in their car, and it totally fucks everything up.
Nice.
But... fun book. It's a lot darker and a lot more serious than I remember the original TV show. And I'll be honest, I was kind of curious on this one just because of the fact that I don't know. I was on the fence on this book originally before as to whether or not I was going to buy it. And I go in and it's bagged, and I go, well, now I have to buy it. Why is it bagged? I can't quite figure out why it's bagged. You know, it's PG-13 at best. You know, I mean, they're swearing, but it's like bleeped out swearing.
Yeah.
You know, there's no nudity. There's implied, you know.
Yeah.
Nudity, like they're in a strip club, but like the girls are all in bikinis. You know, so I'm like, okay, I don't quite understand why, but cool story. It's a really interesting take on the whole thing.
See, looking at this, though, they are so stealing their source material from Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Wow, it's like one hand stealing from the other and then stealing it back, right? Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. It's dark. There is a twist in here that there's a new drug that's turning people into zombies.
Oh.
Which I thought was kind of interesting. I do have one thing that I was not a fan of that made this book very difficult for me to get through was that it's hand lettered. And
oh, really?
I don't know if it's because I believe this was digital first and then came over to print, that there's some panels where, I mean, the letters are really freaking small, and maybe it's because I'm just getting old. But, you know, when you've got hand lettered and small, some of the letters were bleeding together. It just made it difficult to read. So if I had one suggestion, the only suggestion would be to go to, you know, traditional lettering on there. But that's my take on it. Jim, did you have a thought now that you've seen it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I like it for the feel.
Yeah. It's always entertaining to see, like, going back to hand lettering. And it definitely fits with Mahfoud's art.
Yeah. I mean, it works really well stylistically. From a legibility standpoint, yeah. It made it harder for me. So, yeah, I don't know. But anyway, that was a really cool book. I just wanted to bring that one up since I was on the 80s kick. So, Tony, what did you have this week?
I had Inhuman number 13, written by Charles Soule, art by Andre Arujo, color by Richard Eisenhoff. And are you reading Inhuman still?
You know what's funny is actually I had it. It was in my pull. I had it in my hand, and I went, I got to cut something this week, and that's the book that got cut.
This shouldn't be the book that gets cut, because this is, I mean, going to be Marvel's big book that they're pushing now. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. having Inhumans coming in. I mean, I truly believe in the Inhuman nation now. And with that being said, the last couple books have been a little bit setting up story, you know, a little, I don't even know the correct word, expose or something.
Exposition?
Yes, that word.
Expose was that, what was that awesome 80s band? Or was that 90s?
I don't even know. But
no, it was like three chicks. Keep going.
To where we're at, like, when they had that whole Medusa becoming evil thing with the access and everything, it was interesting. And I think access was fun. I don't think they went long enough to have some of these characters truly turn into their evil or better selves within the pages. Because what it felt like within Humans is that she was bad, she then kind of left, and then came back when they were under attack. Cool, but that's not a big story arc for someone who is now the queen because Black Bolt's gone. Oh wait, Black Bolt's back. And this is where you're starting to see a rift within the Inhuman Attila nation, because there's other Inhuman cities and everything, and all of them are trying to get all the new cocooned, really formed Terra Genesis people that went through that giant cloud that went around the world. And this story arc right here, this one is called Lineage, which is a new character who I'm...
Oh, this is the guy that, like, anybody he's related to?
Yeah.
He can like, read,
yeah,
their
somehow, even
their
even their descendants
or whatever.
Yeah, so, like, if you go back to saying, you know, we all came from Adam and Eve or two people, technically you would all have some relationship somehow. And that's kind of how they're kind of using his ability, that even like a distant cousin back, you know, 10 generations, he kind of says in here, someone died, he then got their knowledge. Like, he just retains their knowledge. So he has everything from his past.
So if he has Genghis Khan as one of his ancestors, he has a lot of knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah.
But if he's got any of us as one of his descendants, he's fucked.
And this is really taken in part who this person is now, and he's been conniving, but he's also been helpful, so you're like, all right, maybe they're just kind of painting him in a bad light because he's a new guy and he's a dickhead. no, he's actually a fucking bad guy, and you kind of understand that within these pages. I just find his powers and some of these new characters that Charles is making really interesting. Like, you don't see a lot of, in comics nowadays, new characters being introduced as much as they've been pushing with Inhuman.
Or, especially like in Big Two comics, they aren't creating new characters as much as they're trying to just rewrite old ones.
Yeah. So, we'll say it's kind of sad Stegman wasn't on this. He drew the cover. But you can tell in the art a little bit that the characters seem a little bit drawn younger, as far as Flint and Inferno and everything. Just from what they were being drawn, they look a little bit more like teenagers now instead of young 20-somethings.
Well, now who did the art on this one again? I'm sorry.
Andrea Ruggio.
Okay, yeah. I think it's just more of a stylistic change. I mean, like, it's a little bit smoother, more rounded lines, where Stegman's gotten a little bit, you know, I think more squared off as of, you know, at least as of recently, and he's a little bit edgier with what he's drawing comparatively, just from what I'm seeing, you know, there. But
there's two big things within this book of a reason why I want to talk about it. And one, do you know who Eldrick is?
No.
He is this guy. The mouth, giant mouth looking head thing that they go through and teleports them.
Oh.
I remember reading anywhere in the comics. They haven't really used him lately. But that thing right there, which you just think is a doorway to, and the thing's powers is not to send you where you want to go, it's where you need to go, which is always kind of a cool plot device, because half the times when the people step through it, they don't know where they're going to end up always, and that in itself leaves a little bit of a mystery to the story when Black Bolt will go through and be like, why am I, you know, in the Himalayas or something, and then you find out the reason why he was sent there.
Is it because Lockjaw buried something there?
Yeah.
Like he had a bone, and he's like, ha-ha, I'm putting it this here.
Well, that's one of the things, like, they have in Lockjaw, yeah, they can just teleport wherever, but sometimes they use Eldrick mainly because they're like, shit needs to be done, I don't know where to go, send me where I need to go. However, what you need to remember is this is an Inhuman. This was someone who was human before that went through the Terra Genesis and then became a fucking artifact, became a doorway. How shitty would your life be? And having read Inhuman like comics for a while, this person has been around for a long time. And to see lineage kind of say, hey, you know, that's got to suck. I think I might have figured something out. This doorway now is like, okay, I'm going to side with you. And does some shit and zap some people where they don't want to be when they all step through it, mainly Medusa and her entourage of people. That in itself, I thought, was an awesome way of writing a character that doesn't speak, doesn't really do anything, but you get the sense of, okay, this person wants to not have to be, you know, stationary the rest of their lives. And it's one of those things that no one actually really ever thought that this doorway was actually human at one point. And so I really enjoyed that part of this book, like that in and of itself. I was talking to my brother about it, and he goes, holy fuck, I never thought of that. And I go, yeah. So Charles, awesome. The big reveal at the end, though, Karnak is someone who I've always thought was one of the coolest Inhumans. He finds the weakness in everything.
Yeah.
That power is actually in and of itself probably the best power anyone can have, because to find the weakness in anything, pretty much you're unstoppable. And even him knowing his own weakness, as long as he doesn't get that out, he is pretty unstoppable. Yeah, he be dead, and he died.
What?
He died a while ago at the first Inhumans book, right after the crash, because it was something crazy or another where he's like, I see the pattern, holy shit, and he goes and like jumps off of the building. When that happened, and I know I talked about it then because I reviewed it saying, holy fuck, he's dead.
I didn't think he was actually dead.
Well, he's dead. Like, he died on impact.
Well, yeah, but, like, yeah.
Oh, but you think comic book dead?
Yeah.
Because you would be correct, because he's on the last page saying we're all dead. And, yeah, I'm in hell. But even hell has a weakness.
Yeah.
And I can see it. And I'm just like, holy fuck! That is another storyline that I can't wait to, I don't know, Inhuman, fucking pick up this book. So good. Cool. I'll end rant.
All right. And just to clarify, yeah, number one hit in 1988 was Seasons Change by Exposé. Okay. Yeah, it was a ballad. Yeah, you should check it out. So I'm going to go back and listen to this and go, oh my God, I remember that song. It was terrible then, too. But, Jim, did you have a book you wanted to talk about, at least mention this week, if not go into a full review?
Yeah, sure. So there's been this series that DC's been running for the last 7 or 8 months.
Who's called, DC?
They're this comic book publisher.
Okay. Stands for Detective Comics.
Detective Comics has been running. It's called The Multiversity. It's written by Grant Morrison and drawn by a slew of the best creators in comics. And this week we got Ultra Comics. The character Ultra Comics.
That's his name?
His name is Ultra Comics. This is like his physical form.
Were
right
his parents
here.
High when they named this? Him?
The actual comic book is his physical form.
Oh. I think. All right, I've only read this like 2.5 times through. So with Morrison, and especially The Multiversity, you have to read this like a dozen times to catch everything. This is wild. It goes into the meta-fiction world.
Metaphysical?
No, meta-fiction. This comic is completely aware that you are reading it.
Oh.
So you get this character, Ultra Comics, and his creation story. We get an awesome visual from Doug Monkey, the artist of this issue. I'll show you guys really quick. This is his creation. Ooh. He is a comic book, so you have him standing in a super scientific area, and he's being injected with CMYK, the colors to make a comic book, right?
What I'm actually curious why the K, because technically the C, the M, and the Y create the K.
No, black is its own ink, and it's called K. I
know, but technically, you put those three colors together.
No, I don't think they make black.
I don't think these specific, because they're not like red, yellow, and blue. They're offshoots.
I understand.
They want to make a pure black.
I'm not an artist. I'm just saying from what I read and understood.
It would be brown.
That when you put those together, that it creates the black or the key, which is where you get the K. Actually, I did read up on this shit at some point. But anyway.
Yeah. Art school. Yeah. Didn't teach me any of this.
Well, didn't teach you how to draw either, but we'll get to that. All right.
So this story takes place on Earth Prime. If you got the guidebook to the Multiversity a couple months ago, you'll know that Earth Prime, Earth 33, is our world, and this is where the story takes place. We create this comic book that is created to take on a hostile, independent thought form, and it's aware that you're reading this. It invades the comic and tries to invade your mind, essentially.
So it's constantly breaking the fourth wall.
This is like farther than the fourth wall, I feel.
So
break your mind.
You're emotionally linked to Ultra in this.
So this is what a Deadpool comic should be.
No.
That was for you, Tony.
I don't know.
But it's a really cool adventure. He runs into a bunch of different iterations of characters named Ultra throughout DC's history, and fights the Hit, which is really freaky. I gotta say, I read this at 2 in the morning.
Yeah,
and I almost had some nightmares out of this page specifically. I'll show you guys, but this is the thought form that's invading your mind as you're reading it.
Oh, nice. It's basically a Cyclops giant bat.
Reminds me of one of the bad guys in Zelda.
Yeah.
The giant spider thing.
Yeah, in a Zelda or a Final Fantasy or any of those. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was like some cool points in this. He uses internet comments about like criticism about the comic itself to try to attack this villain. And he also goes back to the beginning of the book. You start off kind of like in the middle of the story, mm-hmm. and then you get to the beginning of the story. You continue on, and he has to go back to the beginning to that scene that you first saw him in to, like, rejuvenate and then come back and kick more ass. So it really ends with if you put this book down, you're safe. That Earth Prime hasn't been invaded by this this associate of the Gentry, who's the main villain over the entire Multiversity story. And we're okay. All these other Earths are fucked.
I feel like perhaps rather than drinking beer, this would be one of those where, like, taking drugs would be more beneficial to read this comic.
Possibly. You might be digging yourself into a deeper hole, though. But yeah, onto the art, though. Monkey's one of my favorite kind of go-to guys at DC. He's done Green Lantern, and him and Morrison teamed up during Final Crisis to tell a really cool Superman story. He always has this hint of horror everywhere, like, especially with the design of the villain,
mm-hmm.
But also just the expressions you get out of him, like on the cover.
Yeah.
It's always beautifully exaggerated, and really makes a compelling visual component to the story. But yeah, I would totally recommend not picking this up unless you read everything before. But it does, I guess, it is a one-shot like all of the Multiversity stories, so you could kind of just test out one and decide if you want to go back to the beginning. But this is definitely one of my favorite things that DC has done in a very long
time.
That
really makes me want to read it, because of just what you're saying in of itself. Sounds like an awesome experiment. Not really an experiment, but just something different. That I read one Multiversity book, so it kind of sucks that if I have to read the rest, I'm going to have to go get them before stealing this copy from you. But
all right, well, cool. Well, let's move on. And we'll kind of get some stuff done. Once again, guys, that was Off the Shelf, brought to you by Motor City Comic Con. Should we jump into some news here, Tony?
If you want.
All righty.
I feel like being Eeyore today.
Okay. well, then I think the biggest news this week, hands down, was that there was a picture posted of Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. He shaved his head.
I'm so shocked.
this is a big story on Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah, well, as I was telling you, like, I had seen this story and thought, what the fuck's the story? I don't get it.
No, there really isn't a fucking story.
Yeah, but Lex Luthor. They're making it out to be, that he's Lex Luthor. I'm like, okay, but what's the news of this? Like, he looks pretty badass, like Lex Luthor, whatever. I didn't realize the whole article was about him shaving his head, and I go, okay.
Yeah.
So we're still like a year, over a year away from this movie, right?
March 25th, 2016.
So a year.
Basically, it's a year from now almost.
So, you know, they've been revealing stuff. Batman, Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman. They eventually have to show Lex Luthor, and it's...
Was he originally going to... I think part of it, if I recall correctly, but could be wrong, I think they were saying that he was going to have the curly hair Lex Luthor that they've shown a couple times in comic books.
Lore. That was a wig.
Yeah.
But there's his alter egos from different stuff. When he actually has hair, he truly does have curly.
Wasn't he a ginger, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why nobody likes him. no, actually, I wish I could have found it. Somebody took a picture. There's a whole bunch of, like, newspapers stacked up that... did you see this, Jim?
I think I saw it.
Yeah. And all... like, where the fold in the paper is, it's basically, like, at his forehead.
I don't think that was... that wasn't the same photo, or, like, the Jesse Eisenberg photo.
Oh, it wasn't?
I think it was just a bald man on a newspaper.
Okay, yeah, but, like, the whole stack of them there, it just looks like a penis. Because of the way that it's done, but... yeah, so... although... speaking of revealing things like Aquaman and all that, back in 1984, two fans did a home movie. and Jim, I know you haven't got to see any of, like, the pictures. Shoot, I don't know if this article has the any of the stills in it. But yeah, they got DC's blessing to actually make this this fan film, and they did it on a $10,000 budget. And yeah, it's out there. You can go to YouTube and actually find this old fan film. I guess the first, you know, the beginning of it starts out. It's just like paintings that kind of tell the story, and then eventually it gets into. Eventually, it'll get into like the actual story of you know who's what and where. But I can't.
Derek's currently trying to show me a scene or two.
Yeah, and it just won't let me. Won't let me scan forward. So it's yeah. Yeah, well, but yeah, it's kind of interesting. If you guys want to check it out,
did you watch it all?
I didn't watch all of it. I kind of scanned through, but it. Just go to YouTube and look up Aquaman, the cast of The Angler. Yeah, it's 20 minutes long. The article I saw was actually from Yahoo, and you know I guess basically I'll kind of read a little bit of this off that that Arthur Curry Aquaman, you know. Learns that the greatest threat to the oceans comes from the nefarious polluters and hunters on land, and so he becomes a marine biologist.
Of course.
And there. And the bad guy is the angler, who is, quote, a banana-addicted ocean hater who kills fish and tortures Mormon choir members, threatens to destroy the Pacific.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you feel about these guys taking on the Jason Momoa Aquaman?
Well, I think first we need to talk about the fact that he's addicted to bananas and tortures Mormon choir members.
I want to see this in Jason Momoa Aquaman.
I think so. I think we should probably petition DC and say we need the angler, and we need that. But yeah, so. Check that out, guys, if you want a little interesting. You want to see the original, the real Aquaman movie?
Yeah.
You know, none of this Justice League bullshit. You know, so. Tony, what else did you have?
Well, something I just found, which I think it'd be a cool premise to a book. IDW is putting Godzilla in hell this July.
Oh, yeah, I saw
so
that.
So that's kind of going to be interesting, like. Part of the Godzilla, though, is having humans around.
No, I think it would just be hilarious, like him just smashing up hell, you know. But, although, wait, breathing fire's not going to do him any fucking good.
Yeah, so there's some drawbacks for him being hell, one being so he had to have died or something. And then I guess everything he has done to save us really wasn't good in the eyes of God, and...
Oh.
Going to hell.
Well, yeah. Maybe he found a pocket to hell underwater when he was just like hanging out in between missions.
Yeah, that could be.
I think if I remember correctly, James Stokoe's drawing that first issue. That's gonna be incredible.
There's a couple little things in here. I talked about Chrononauts number one last week. There's a
Chrononauts.
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 Yeah. Chrononauts. From Mark Millar and Sean Gordon Murphy. And on the cover, like, Tony, I don't know, did you see this?
Mm-mm.
Okay, the watch there. There's a hidden image in the watch, and it's not the cracked glass on the watch.
Okay.
But, you know, as you go down here, oh, did they take it off? Oh, wait, hold on. It used to... Oh, shoot, it's not in the article anymore.
They probably don't want the spoilers.
Oh. Okay, well, basically, there was a thing here, and I know that, Murphy had it tweeted out, but he put something in there, so if you have one specific form of color blindness, you can see the Chrononauts logo in the watch face.
Now, is the Chrononauts logo gold and white or black and blue?
No, it's well, it the only black and blues will be yours later when we're done beating you. But no, it's kind of like it looks like a green hourglass in there. So yeah, it's one of those cool things. But yeah, I think if you go look on Twitter, you can see how he showed you. Like, they'll reverse the colors and then, like, expand on it so you can see how it is. But it's just kind of cool that there's little weird Easter eggs in his stuff all the time. Sometimes you know about him, sometimes you don't.
Mm-hmm. So, The Walking Dead is having a sale over at Comixology right now. 60% off their trades and everything. So just go check that out.
Well, yeah, it's just like the flesh is just falling off the bone over there. Yeah.
No, actually, never mind. It ends 3:30, so by the time this podcast is posted, people may have a couple hours to get that. So I guess you guys...
Hey, good for you. good for you guys that are sitting there waiting for this show to come out on Sunday night. X-Files is coming back to television.
This fucking is... I'm stoked for this. More so than Ryan Reynolds showing his Deadpool costume. Like, the X-Files, I love that show. I like to listen to The Nerdist, and they had Gillian Anderson on there. They were just chatting with her of, would this be a possibility? Is this something? And they started the hashtag X-Files, X-Files 2015 or something. I don't know if this is all coming straight from there, but they definitely put the worm in her ear of like, hey, if David Duchovny's not doing anything, get the rest of the team together, can you make it happen? And so... Yes, I'm happy.
Well, I was happy to see that Chris Carter, you know, is coming back for this, and I think the best line ever was he goes, I think it was a 13-year commercial break. that's awesome. So it's just going to be like a 6-episode, you know.
Little miniseries.
Miniseries.
Yeah. But I hope they fucking answer some of those things, like what the hell were the bees and the other aliens that came down.
What happened? Bees make honey.
You don't. You probably don't know what happened then in the last season, do you?
The bees, where they're in the bee place, and all the bees came after them. Yeah, the bees.
I think I've only seen the first episode and Seth Green was in it, right? I think.
Yeah.
Like a very young Seth Green with super long hair. He's like a stoner.
Well, no, that's the Robot Chicken version.
No. Wasn't he?
I don't know. Anyway. Now, so more on that as it comes out. Tony, what else did you have out there?
I don't know, so I'm kind of trying to...
You're trying to look. Yeah. Okay, so we don't talk politics too much on this show, and I'm not going to talk politics on here, but President Obama has like a mass email thing that goes out, and so, like, I mean, if you're a supporter of his... chances are you've gotten these emails before, or you're getting them now. And he talked about community organizers being kind of having a correlation between the comic book characters that he liked as a kid and the fact that, you know, all heroes have an origin story. I think that's kind of cool, regardless of whatever politics are involved. I'm like, okay, that's a neat way to try and, you know, relate to people. And so he was asking, hey, if you got a cool origin story, tell it to me. Here's where the real controversy lies. He talks about how when he was a kid, how he really enjoyed Conan the Barbarian and Spider-Man. He made Spider-Man one word. No hyphen. I'm like, no, absolutely not. No, fuck this. No, I'm calling for an impeachment based on the fact that you don't know how to fucking spell Spider-Man right. And there's a hyphen. It's capital S, capital M. Get it right or get the fuck out of that office. So, all right. There you go. Tony, what else? Did you actually get your computer to work yet?
Yeah, but it's all stuff that...
All right, Robotech.
Oh, yeah! I could have talked about that one, but...
There's going to be a live-action Robotech movie coming out from Sony. That's in development, and... I don't know if they've got like a time frame on it because it's just now getting started, but I would guess probably a couple years out.
Yes, movie studios, anything with giant fucking robots make, whether that be Voltron, whether that be Power Rangers, whether that be GoBots. Yeah,
GoBots. Yeah, let's have a GoBots movie.
Did you know they went to a rock planet one time and they had transforming rocks and there's toys?
These things
they transformed into rocks. So it was like a rock, and then it could transform into like a person or like humanoid thing. That's why GoBots were the retarded stepbrother of Transformers.
You know what else makes money in movies? Jubilee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Jubilee is going to be in the new X-Men Apocalypse movie.
Jubilation!
Yeah. I wasn't really going to bring this up, except
last... Because you don't like her?
Well, it's just like, well, a lot of people don't like Jubilee, but I'm okay with Jubilee. I just think it's kind of like a, well, there's your 90s character, you know. But the fact...
Do you think that she ruined the X-Men?
No, Storm ruined the X-Men.
Oh. Whoa!
Yeah, I hate Storm.
All right.
Yeah, she, my favorite thing, Tony, I don't know if we've
talked... Who do you like? Who's your perfect X-Men cast?
I'm Kitty Pride.
Okay, so, okay. So X-Men composed of Kitty Pride?
I'd go Kitty, Colossus, Wolverine, Nightcrawler. That's a good start right there. I'll come back on a couple more. Oh, Psylocke.
What's your prefix to it?
Like, my prefix?
Yeah.
No, that's a 616.
No, but but like, is it amazing? Is it?
What's your adjective?
Yeah, adjective is what I meant.
The.
Thanks, English major. Oh.
The X-Men.
Oh. Not the?
No. The X-Men. Yeah. T-H-E-E. But, no, so I didn't really think that this was, like, newsworthy enough to bring up, except for the fact that I get out to the bar last night, and a friend of mine, like, comes up to me. He's like, dude, did you hear that? Did you hear about X-Men Apocalypse? Dude, they got Jubilee cast in it.
I want to know who you're mocking right now so I can make fun of you.
He was serious. Like, he was very excited. I was like, you're excited? He goes, dude, he goes, I can't help it. He goes, I fucking loved that cartoon when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And so I guess maybe it is news. Not everyone feels about Jubilee the way that you know, Tony feels about the new Fantastic Four movie. And
I don't think many people, actually, no, many people do feel the same way I do about that movie.
Did you see the new faux pas with that, yeah, Tony?
I'm trying to stay away from anything that irks me.
Basically, what it was is the biggest thing now is that they have their little new movie poster.
Yep,
and it's pretty much just a straight recreation of the Halo 3.
Oh yeah,
poster.
Well, did you see the other? There's other Fantastic Four news. An image of the Thing has finally been released. Yeah,
and it looks like the retarded rock creatures I was talking about from GoBots.
It wasn't released as like an official press release or some kind of promotional thing. It popped up on a random guy's Instagram account. They had a billboard posted up somewhere, and a guy got a photo with it, and that's how the world saw the Thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I did see that one. Yeah, the one with I think actually that might have been in the same article that I saw was just some like guy juicing it up.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. That was a little.
But Tony, you didn't like the trailer?
No, I didn't like anything about
boy.
It doesn't feel Fantastic Four-y.
No, but
I mean, it looks like it could be a cool action movie. But it doesn't look what I've known as
what they are.
Tony's being the bitchy little fanboy. But here's the Halo 3 poster and the Fantastic Four poster. Anybody seeing similarities?
A little bit.
A little bit?
It's probably unintentional.
Yeah. It's kind of like that Arrow and that the Arrow poster. And then there was like that other like vampire poster for the CW.
Yeah.
Where it was the exact same body, just with somebody else's head on each one. Oops.
Speaking of CW, I watched iZombie the other day.
Oh, how was it?
I actually enjoyed it. It was... I've never read the book, so I can't compare it to it, but interesting character, so it makes me kind of want to read the books, because I was like, oh, that's interesting, yeah. So
I have one more thing that I want to make sure that I bring up here before we finish up on news, because I know we're probably running a little long on this, but the Greg Rucka and Michael Lark book Lazarus is coming to television.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. So it's being done by Legendary TV. that if you want to read more about it, Hollywood Reporter had the exclusive story on it to start, so you can check that out. But I'm super excited about this because that's such a solid fucking book.
Yeah,
I stopped buying it in single issues, and I've just gone to trades at this point, just because it was just really hard for me to keep up on a lot of stuff. And this book is so beautifully written. I had to keep reading. So anyway. Congrats to you guys on that one. This is, I think if this is done right, this is going to be the next massive television show, mm-hmm. because the book's just so fucking good. But, all right, Tony, did you have anything else or you want to wrap it up here?
Should wrap it up.
All right, cool. Let's do a little bar back here today.
I don't know if we have time.
Yeah. Right, Jim, can you come back next week?
You know, if we must. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, no, actually, the main reason we brought Jim here, besides just to make fun of him,
you know, there's another reason.
Well, the secondary reason, you know, I mean, the verbal punching bag is always fun, but no, Jim, you have you've got yourself a new little book out, which I know we mentioned here briefly on the show before.
Yeah,
Silver Plague. Tell people to go check it out. But first issue is fully done.
It's fully done and ready for print.
And so you decided, you know what, I'm going to do a little Kickstarter for people that want print, that don't want to go read the digital book.
Yep. The page 24 just came out this past Tuesday.
I thought it was page 28.
Nice little pre-show joke there. But page 24 came out.
You say pre-show like we're going to edit that stuff out. Anyway, keep going.
Oh, yeah, that was part. Oh, man, it's all just a big podcast flurry up in my head right now.
Yeah.
So that wrapped up the first issue. It's all available online to read right now, but we are I am taking it to print. But print is obviously very expensive, so trying to gather up the support to make this thing happen. And so the Kickstarter just started this week. And
it's going funded.
It's going pretty well, yeah.
Yeah, if funded in a little less than 2 days.
Yep. That was crazy. I was not expecting that whatsoever.
I wasn't either. I'm like, people are giving you money?
Well, geez, if it's funded, we don't even talk about this anymore. I mean,
well, no, mostly I just want Jim to be like stuffed under a pile of commissions.
Yeah.
From now until like November.
That
of
is
next
what
year.
I was thinking. I was like, can they, what is some of the goals right now? Like, can they pick what you can draw?
Yeah. So a few of the rewards right now is like at $15, you get the book plus a little 6x9 sketch. I've been busting those out the last couple of days. So I'm keeping on top of all the commissions and stuff. But there are bigger levels for a 9x12 commission of whatever you want and an 11x17. Those are almost gone at the time of recording, but
we will try to open those up more so that Jim has work to do over the summer.
Yeah.
I'm planning, you know, within the next 2 months, you know, to get that all done, so everything will probably be shipped out by May.
There's original pages.
Yeah.
I know there's that secret tier level that we didn't discuss at all that has something to do with Drunk on Comics that you are going to announce right now, correct?
I have no idea what you're
You can
talking
make
about.
Up whatever and be like, yay!
It's the secret Drunk on Comics tier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think it's, like, it was at the $500 level.
Okay.
At the $500 level.
You get to take us out to lunch. You fly us out to wherever you live.
Yeah.
Listen, if you pledge $500, I'm going to take Drunk on Comics out to lunch.
There you go.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
You're not included,
there were some suggestions from people off air that perhaps one of them would be that you could crawl into bed with somebody at a convention, you know, while they're sleeping. That would be one potential. That perhaps you could show some dance moves on a Florida convention with two beers in your hands.
We could have fun with this Kickstarter. Fuck, let's just start doing our own Kickstarter for Jim.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, there are some options of potential things.
So start those stretch goals. Get them going.
By the way, I did check. Actually, I'm up through this page 16 was
where. Oh, okay.
Yeah, like once I, because I was flipping through on my phone. Okay, this is the last page I read because I don't recognize this page yet. So,
Well, 16. Derek, what do you think of Silver Plague so far?
You want to know what? For as much shit as I like to give you, it's hard for me to like bash you on this one, which I think that says enough. Like, you know, because as my friend, you take a lot of shit.
Oh yeah, you know, just a minute ago. Right there.
Yeah. Do you have the whole story fleshed out? Like,
oh yeah. I know where this thing is going. Kind of like years from now.
Oh, so does it have a finite end?
This story arc does.
Well, that's why it's called an arc.
yeah. But there is, obviously, I have more ideas playing around with the 60s. For the listeners, I guess, who don't know, this is kind of my love letter to Marvel's Silver Age and James Bond and just the culture of the 1960s. So this first story arc kind of dives into modern art and abstract expressionism, like your Jackson Pollocks and Barnett Newmans, and it follows a painting in a gallery that comes to life, and the CIA's Zero Division, which is fiction, is tasked with stopping.
That you know of.
Well, yeah, of
or
course.
That you're admitting to, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so they have a couple agents that are tasked with tracking this painting down that's just running around the world before the Russians get to her or something maybe even worse.
Those damn commies. Yeah.
Where did this idea come from?
Well, a couple years ago, the CIA, there's very limited information on this, but the CIA did admit that they funded a lot of abstract expressionism as a Cold War tactic.
Oh.
So while Russia was off doing like social realism, you know, with people with their hammers and stuff, we were throwing paint at the wall and doing all this crazy shit. And it was kind of just like a big fuck you to communism and to show American freedom. And I thought that was pretty crazy. So how about if they do fund abstract expressionism and it all goes crazy like a decade later? And so that's pretty much the story. There's extra pages and story in the Kickstarter version of the book that aren't going to be released online. And if we hit a couple stretch goals, there's going to be a lot more content added to it as well.
Nice. So, guys, go to Kickstarter and look up Silver Plague, or you can find the link on our Facebook page. You can go to jimtoe.com. That's T-O-W-E. Mm-hmm. It's like the tow truck with an E. Or like a toe, but with a W in the wrong spot. So, anyway, guys, check it out. Very, very well worth supporting this one if you haven't already.
I just have one quick question. How'd you get Phil Noto to draw for you?
Okay. Well,
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. All right.
I don't know what to say.
Sorry, I knew that'd make Derek laugh.
Jim's style definitely does have a Phil Noto feel to it, which is something we've always teased Jim about. Yeah. So, but anyway, all right, Tony, let's move on to the Indy Turnpike.
Yes, Indy Turnpike this week is Passed Aways, issue number one, written by Matt Kint, art by Scott Collins, colors by Bill Crabtree. I'm just going to quick say this before I even talk about this book. There have been a fuck ton of comic books recently that have been time travel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, more than I've ever remembered at one moment in time. And obviously, it's a story arc mechanism that there may even... there's time travel fucking even in X-Men right now with the past selves and whatever. This book... For me, after having read multiple different ones, and I haven't read every single time travel book that's out there, has been, I feel, the most fun and most different. I mean, I reviewed Bill and Ted's new book the other day, and that was, I mean, that's fun, but that's Bill and Ted's type time travel. They got their own set thing. That's what makes that book unique to them.
We had Chrononauts. We had Eight. I mean, those are two, like, we had Ivar Time Walker. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot recently that we've talked time travel.
Yeah, and with all those, I feel, though, it's just a story arc mechanism and not the full story. And the way I say that is, what I like most about this is these people are from 1.2 million years in the future that are stuck here. And we are to what, if we went back in time to Neanderthals, this is what these people are viewing us. And when you think about that, you're like, well, that's stupid. I mean, they should know who we are, history and everything. But we don't have everything of what Neanderthals were talking then. Where they come from, they don't have recordings of everything here now. That in its of itself makes this unique, I think, to me, where the way that they talk about shit going on here in the 21st century, 2015, as well as, I mean, besides just that whole part of the whole book, I really enjoy extras in comic books, the backstories that, then I mentioned it before, when writers and artists talk about what they're doing. I really like that are in the pages, these little, like, talking about their gadgets. And did you read this at all, Jim?
No, I didn't have
like,
a chance.
They show, like, this and then explains what it is. Like, it's a brain-scanning thing.
It's almost kind of like, I would imagine, like a Google Glass type thing.
Yeah, while you're writing?
Like, yeah, like you're looking, and I mean, it's consistently through here where you'll see, like, the little square, and then there's a little...
Oh,
little
like a caption at the bottom. Yep. Yeah.
And then little
like,
square.
Like, one of the first ones, and it's not just their tech, it's also other tech that they see now, like a primitive cellular device that basic features that do little more than distract the user from life-threatening real-world events. And that's zooming in on, like, an iPhone. Like, that they are cataloging and doing this. One of... It's like when we were talking about Thomas Alsop, like his repertoire of magical devices. This I like because it's, I mean, it's tech, but what these things can do. One of them was the 6D quantile whatever glasses that can see multiple timelines and where they converge, because with time travel you got the paradoxes and everything. And I don't know, it's just cool. They can make up whatever the hell they want 1 million years in the future, and it's their book, they can say whatever, but to then play with this past as if this happened and somehow off did it, I don't know. It's, I really enjoy the little extras, even the front cover, you know, has those little bios of the people, and it has like a breakaway of their secret base. And
what's interesting is that, you know, on the back cover we've got the same, but I got the Matt Kent cover.
Oh, nice.
Which is a little bit different, and each one, you know, like there's a little tag for each of the people in there kind of thing. So
there's
although I did want to point out the guy here at the bottom reminds me a lot of Walter White.
Yeah, yeah. Very Bryan Cranston like
on this cover. But
there's a lot of, it's really kind of just some humor in the pages too. Like within this, the first creature that you'll see within the first page, this miniature little dragon looking thing that
shoots
acid out of its ass.
Yeah. But, well, the first page, the perspective, yeah. It makes it look like this giant creature, but then you realize it's standing like on like a little souvenir.
Yeah.
You know, on the second page.
And that makes you kind of laugh. And of course, why are they trapped here? You know, what's going on? Why did they come back here? All that's a mystery, which has me just intrigued to find out more about these people.
The thing that the one of the funniest parts for me in this book was when they do capture that little dragon, and he has he's got a hold of the gland,
the acid gland. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'll just leave that for people to read themselves because, yeah, when they've got the acid gland, I'm like, oh, okay, all right. The one thing I'll say, this book was,
I'm seeing that correctly.
Yeah, yeah, you're seeing that correctly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you are, Jim. We just showed Jim.
See, that's
funny. Yep. You guys want to see it? You got to go buy a copy yourself.
I know I'm going to.
Yeah. This book was insanely dense and it jumped around a lot. I didn't enjoy it as much the first time. I enjoyed it more the second. But when you said, oh my God, I love this, I was like, really? I was a little shocked that you liked this
book. I just like, well, I'm really curious. Biggest thing is, why the fuck can't they die?
Yeah, okay.
Look, that's a huge mystery. That's really awesome that they just throw that right in the first issue, and that one of them's kind of wanting to commit suicide, but she can't. And is that something that all humans have, or are they beyond normal humans in a million years from now? That there's just a lot that they could do with this that, like I said, it makes it different and unique from other time travel books. Because, yeah, time travel books, you're thinking they're going to the future, they're going to the past. No, they're right here now with us. So that's Indie Turnpike for this week.
Cool. All right, Booze in a Book brought to you guys by InkWhiskey.com. Go check out InkWhiskey.com and go buy yourself some fucking cool-ass flasks, man. I mean, you can fill it with, like, a, you know, dragon acid that comes out of its butt, or you can, you know, fill it with your own favorite booze or lemonade. We don't suggest milk in the flasks, but, you know, pretty much anything else is fair game. But yeah, check them out. There's 10 titles. Oh, I was pissed, and I'm hoping to God when we see these guys that they have the Fine Ale Fantasy, because online the Fine Ale Fantasies are sold out.
Oh, geez.
So Fine Ale Fantasy.
Which, by the way, that was a suggestion. Last year at Motor City Comic Con, we had just picked these guys up,
mm-hmm.
As, you know, started working with them as our sponsors. And so we had a few of them at the show. We didn't have many. But we had a few of them there, and it was basically just for promotional. Talked to a good friend, Chris, and I'm like, yeah, I said my favorite game was always Final Fantasy. And I'm like, I go, but I can't come up with a good name for it. And he goes, let me think about it. And he walks away, and I swear to God, it was like maybe 33 seconds later, he comes back, and he goes, I know it's beer, but he goes, Fine Ale Fantasy. And I'm like, done. I sent it over to the guys, and that was one now that they've got up there. Tetra Tequila is another one that they've got out now, which is pretty damn nice. Slick. But anyway, inkwhiskey.com. You guys heard enough about that. This week, I am pairing a Smittix Premium Irish Ale with the Punisher number 16 from Marvel. Just a little bit of credit, written by Nathan Edmondson and art and cover by Mitch Gerads. Smittix is your classic, you know, red-ish ale. It's a little bit, it's not quite red, it's not quite brown, it's just an Irish ale. A little bit of a kick, fairly hoppy as far as ales are concerned. It's only about a 4.5%, which is why I'm actually pairing this with the Punisher, because, you know, typically the Marvel books don't pack quite as much of a kick as you will on, say, something that has no limits, where, you know, you can kill whoever the fuck you want, whenever you want. And a beer that's only 4.5% typically doesn't have the same kick, say, that, like, a, you know, a microbrew that's double that. But for whatever reason, both this book and this beer kick my ass on a regular basis, and I fucking love them, so go enjoy them both. There you go, guys. Last call, I believe, Tony.
Yeah, Jim, did you read anything else?
No.
Jim's been spending time drawing commissions and hasn't had the time to read anything. So, all right, I've got a couple here. They're not like us. Number four. From
Who's not like us?
What's that?
Who's not like us?
There.
Okay.
They are.
Yeah, but, and what books have you read?
No, but they're not like us.
I know. Who's on first?
Yeah, The Walking Dead. Yeah, the Walking Dead, actually, number 139. This was a fun issue. It's a new look at the world. You're starting to see things. You know, they're going out into the ocean and bringing back fish, and Michonne returns. And she's very pirate-esque in this, because she's running a boat. But now, to go back, they're not like us, number four. You guys should be picking this up. And here's something weird. I was started looking at Simon Gaines' art online. This is a weird situation where I'm really liking the black and white art more than I'm liking the colored. You realize, because I think a lot of the little detail that he puts in with these, like, tiny little fucking pen strokes in the background, you lose a lot of it until you see it in the black and white. Tony, do you have some other ones hiding in your stack there?
Deadpool 44.
Isn't he dead yet?
Nope, next issue, so I'm sure I'll be talking about it then. And then Yeah, there's a couple other ones that I've read that were all right. Autumn Lands is still good, but the biggest news was Avengers. New Avengers, I believe, that just came out. Yeah, Odin's son's dead now. Oops, spoiler alert.
The previous Thor?
Yeah, male Thor.
Wow, that's weird.
Huh.
Yeah.
Now, do you think he's going to stay dead?
No, he's not going to stay dead because we've already seen him in the future, so...
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
well, maybe that timeline's knocked out completely. He's going to be dead forever. We're never going to see Odin son again.
That'd be awesome. All right.
I'll put $10 on that.
Yeah. All right.
Take your $10 now.
Actually, Tony, if you bet on it, you know it's a lost cause. the new Dark Tower book, The Drawing of the Three, came out, issue 1 of 5. Fans of that original novel series, I think, will really like this. I don't know if you haven't read the book or if you haven't caught up to this point if you're going to understand or be able to get drawn into this. For a fan like me, it's amazing fan service, and I'm loving it.
They really don't want kids picking this book up.
Which is weird because...
Not one, but two... little notifications.
Yeah, which is weird because there's a lot of other books that are way worse that don't have that on it. Yeah. But Witches, issue 5, fuck yeah, Daredevil 14, Hit 1957, number 1 of 4, and The Bunker, number 10. Awesome fucking week for books for me. So, yeah, I don't think I had a... I think my... The only bad part of my reading... was, and I used air quotes there for people at home that can't see me doing the bad, you know? was my questioning on hand lettering in the Miami Vice. So if that's the worst thing that happened to me, fuck yeah, I'm good.
So. Well, Jim, I want to thank you for coming. It's been years, and hopefully it's the same until next time you come. So. Oh,
thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Yeah, it's been truly outrageous.
Truly outrageous. All right. Audaciously outrageous.
Rad.
Cowabunga.
Yeah. Synergy. Oh, wait. All right, guys. Keep reading your comic books. We'll be back next week. Talk to you more about them then. We'll see ya.